Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Some said the world will end in fire, some say it would end in ice. Wrong! As it turns out, it's a budget bill passed because everybody hated it. We'll explain what that is, plus Hall of Fame baseball announcer John Miller previews the season, and newsman Bill Curtis fills in for Carl Castle, who suddenly had to fly to the Vatican for a job interview. Hey, Bill, did you enjoy the hamburgers we served you backstage?
Nay.
We'll ask what's under the bun on our quiz coming up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is rejecting calls from the United States for him to step down. Assad's remarks came in a rare interview with a Western newspaper. NPR's Philip Reeves reports.
Washington says it's time for Assad to go. That point's been reiterated by the new Secretary of State, John Kerry, during his current trip. After nearly 2 years of violence and an estimated 70,000 dead, Assad seems in no mood to listen. In an interview with Britain's Sunday Times newspaper, he said it's up to the Syrian people to decide whether their president stays or leaves, and claims it's absurd to argue his departure would stop the fighting. Assad's scathing about Britain's role, calling it bullying and naive, and accusing the British of militarizing the conflict. Britain says it gives non-lethal equipment to Syria's opposition forces, but Foreign Secretary William Hague again said today he doesn't rule out providing arms. Hague's describing Assad's interview as delusional. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
A court in Cairo ruled today that Hosni Mubarak will be put on trial again beginning April 13th. The ousted Egyptian president had been sentenced to life in prison for allowing the killing of protesters during the uprisings that swept the nation in 2011. Nearly 900 people died. An appeals court overturned Mubarak's conviction and ordered a new trial to begin 9 days before the start of parliamentary elections. Mitt Romney says his heart told him he'd win the presidential election, but he told Fox News Sunday he realized his campaign was in trouble when he saw the exit polls in Florida.
We saw that the polls were very close, but we knew that the energy and passion was with our voters.
GOP strategist Karl Rove offered the California Republican Party some advice at the party's spring convention in Sacramento this weekend. Rove said the party needs to reinvent itself if it hopes to remain relevant. NPR's Richard Gonzalez reports.
The Republican Party in the Golden State is in trouble. No Republican holds a statewide office. Fewer than 30% of voters are registered Republican. The party is $500,000 in debt. Speaking Saturday in Sacramento, Rove said California Republicans need to reinvent their party.
My message is this. Get off your ass.
Rove says the California Republican Party can't simply assume that tactics like getting voters to the polls will work. He says the party needs a new strategy, using a broad grassroots approach to expanding its membership and groom diverse candidates to run for office. Rove did not mention issues such as immigration and same-sex marriage, which divide the party and are at odds with public opinion in California. Richard Gonzalez, NPR News, Sacramento.
Workers in New Orleans are trying to figure out why a power plant lost water pressure today. Officials are urging residents in much of the city to boil their water until further notice as a precaution. This is NPR News from Washington. Voters in Switzerland have approved a referendum which would allow shareholders to limit the pay of company executives. The government says the measure passed with 67.9% of the vote. Authorities in Bangladesh are deploying soldiers to a northern district where Islamic Party activists clash with police, part of nationwide unrest after a war crimes tribunal sentenced to death a leader of the largest Islamic party. Delwar Hossein Saidi was convicted of atrocities committed during the 1971 War for Independence from Pakistan. Gunmen have killed at least 5 Malaysian policemen in an ambush not far from a standoff between Malaysian authorities and a band of armed men from the Philippines. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports the men are followers of an ancient sultanate staking historic claims to the area.
The ambush took place late on Saturday, roughly 100 miles from where followers of the Sultan of Sulu are surrounded by Malaysian forces. 12 of the men and 2 Malaysian police were killed in fighting on Friday. The Sultan's men are staking claims to parts of Sabah State on the island of Borneo, which has been part of Malaysia since 1963. Malaysian authorities reject those claims and say they have the situation under control. But there are concerns that the standoff could derail relations between Malaysia and the Philippines or postpone Malaysia's hotly contested upcoming elections. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Jakarta.
Buckingham Palace says Queen Elizabeth is in the hospital being treated for stomach problems. A spokesman says that all her engagements this week are being canceled or postponed, including a planned trip to Rome. The Queen is 86 and was last hospitalized in 2003. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim, online or via mobile at esurance.com.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary newsman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kasell, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. The great baseball announcer John Miller will be with us to talk about the boys of late winter. But first, to start the show, well, we got this great idea from the Oscars last week. And as it turns out, Bill Curtis here, filling in for the vacationing Carl, is not only a legendary newsman, but a song and dance man. So we thought we'd do it up Seth MacFarlane style, but with an NPR twist.
Peter, I'm sorry, but there is no way I'm singing a song called We Heard Your Boobs.
Well, while we work out our creative differences, please give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Erin Tack-Jordan from Eastland, Texas.
Eastland, Texas. Am I correct in assuming that is in the eastern part of Texas?
Oh, no. It's in between Abilene and Fort Worth,
and
so West Central.
So you were making sure that no one could find you. Well, Erin, it's great to have you. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian and host of the Who's Paying Attention podcast, Mr. Alonzo Bowden, right there.
Hello, Erin.
Next up, a comedian and now the head writer of Inside Amy Schumer, premiering April 30th on Comedy Central. It is Jesse Klein.
Hi, everybody.
And finally, a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, the host of My Grandmother's Ravioli on the Cooking Channel, and the busiest man in show business, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Erin.
So, Erin, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kasell, is going to read you 3 quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just 2 of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Kassel's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
So ready.
Here is your first quote.
The Senate should get off their ass and do something.
That was House Speaker John Boehner. He was urging the Senate, over on the other side, to solve what impending crisis?
The sequester.
Yes, sequestration. Oh, no. It's the worstest thing with the boringest name. The word sequestration comes from the Greek root seque, meaning part or partition, and castration, meaning being utterly without balls. This is the latest, as everybody knows, in a series of horrible fiscal disasters that seem to keep happening every month or so.
you know, there's the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling. It's like an action movie, but instead of defusing the ticking time bomb, the hero just hits the snooze button.
Peter,
yes.
It is a little known fact that the sequester was actually forged in the deep fires of Middle Earth.
Was it?
And can only be stopped if we find a hobbit brave enough to carry it into the fires of Capitol Hill.
Oh.
I don't know if we're finding a willing hobbit here.
I know.
It does seem very Indiana Jones, like the debt ceiling is lowered and he makes it out just in the nick of time, but then there's the fiscal cliff and then sequestration. And I'm waiting for like a big deficit boulder to come towards him.
Yeah. Well, President Obama, he apparently came up with the idea of the sequester a couple years ago. He spent the week traveling around the country campaigning against it. His idea was that the budget cuts were so severe and indiscriminate, Congress would have to be crazy to allow them to happen. You could see the miscalculation right there, couldn't you?
I thought this was all about the cancellation of Sequest.
Sequestration? Sequest DSV with
yes,
Roy Scheider?
Roy Scheider.
Yes.
If
awesome
Roy Scheider were still around, this wouldn't be happening.
I know. The thing is like sequestration is being blamed on so many things that you can blame it for anything. It's like your frozen entree doesn't look like the picture in the box. Sequestration! Anne Hathaway? Sequestration! Girl you met on J-Date? Not actually a J. Damn you! Sequestration! According to Obama this week, post-sequestration America will be a horrible dystopia. We will not have the TSA, so we're going to have to pat each other down when we get on planes.
That already happens if you fly Southwest.
That's true.
And that's part of, like, their deal.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Now that was good radio.
Yeah, it was amazing. You got a whole stable in there, it sounds like.
A million of
so
them.
That was the sound of the IKEA kitchen this week where it was discovered what's been making its way into their meatballs.
Horse meat.
Yes. The furniture store IKEA announced they had found horse meat in their famous Swedish meatballs, which frankly we should have seen coming because it always came with a side of hooves. Or when the funny IKEA name for the dish was hearse meat. And it was advertised in their cafeterias as grade A triple crown winning beef.
So wait a minute. So the meat in those meatballs is actually from the horses. Oh, gosh. I hope those Lincoln berries don't come out of the horse either.
That would be bad. You know what's interesting, though? If you have to order 17 plates of the meatballs and you get an Allen wrench, you can reassemble the horse. But there's always one meatball left over, right?
I find it hard to believe that there would be horse meat in the meatballs in a place would build such high-quality furniture.
You think?
Do you know how bad it is when you get to the point Taco Bell can make fun of the meat you're using?
That's true. We should just embrace eating horse.
Yeah.
We should be like, hey, great for you to come over for dinner. Here, try my delicious sea biscuits.
Mm. I don't know. We embrace eating horses. The dogs are going to get nervous.
That's true. And all the news outlets kept using the phrase, well, the horse meat found its way into the burgers. Found its way? What? The horse just wandered in. The horse is like, hey, what are those cows all in line for? It must be something good. I'll join up. All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
I am just a pilgrim, ending his pilgrimage on this earth.
That was someone who ended his pilgrimage this week by taking a helicopter to a Mercedes to his new private castle in Italy. Who was it?
The Pope, the former Pope.
Yes, indeed, Pope Benedict. Very good, yes, very good. This is the Pope's last week in office. He left the Vatican in a helicopter and went to Castle Gandolfo, home of Gandalf. So the Pope's, or I should say the former Pope's, life on out from here is still a mystery. At least we know what he's going to be called. They decided his title would be Pope Emeritus. They would have just gone with calling him the old pope, but that's applied to every pope ever. But Pope Emeritus, it's pretty boring. We came up with some other suggestions. Bill?
O.P., the original pope star. The pontiff, formerly known as Pope. Ex popo facto.
I think the trickiest thing is he's going from being infallible to being fallible, which has got to be difficult, because I wonder if a lot of the cardinals, you know, that he sort of supervised are just going to be contradicting him all the time now, just for the heck of it.
No, that's not right.
You're wrong.
You're not wrong. Sorry.
You're fallible. You're not infallible.
Yeah. Do you think he starts prayers with, hey, remember me?
Bill, how did Erin do in our quiz?
Erin was unbelievable. She got them all right.
Well done, Erin. Congratulations. Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We want to remind everybody that they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org. And you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Jesse, on Sunday night at the movie Argo, about the Iranian hostage crisis, won the Oscar for Best Picture. Now, you expect the losers to be disappointed, but who else objected to that win?
Who else objected to the win of Argo?
Mm-hmm. Well, the question is, what is Argo about?
Well, it's about, Ahmadinejad?
Well, the nation of Iran,
the entire nation.
Yes, they didn't like it.
He seems like the worst.
I know. He definitely gave it one thumb down. Actually, three thumbs down, because he'd cut off a couple from some other people. Iran, the nation of Iran, has called the Oscar awarded by Michelle Obama, no less, to Argo a, quote, ad for the CIA. That said, if it is, it's a better ad for the CIA than that annoying campaign with the "Can you torture me now?" guy. So, why is Iran mad? Well, first of all, they thought Lincoln deserved to win for being an amazing portrayal, a great leader in charge of a young, great Satan. And since they are evil, they actually liked Russell Crowe's singing in Les Mis. But the big thing for Iran was this. Argo, if you saw it, is the true story of the CIA faking a science fiction movie shoot in Iran that was faked to rescue some hostages. So the Iranians are mad because this is the first they've heard that that movie wasn't real. There have been Iranian science fiction nerds camping outside the AMC Tehran 17 in costume for 33 years. TV and the radio. Not the band, it's our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play, and baseball guru John Miller joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Charles Schwab, providing retirement options for a tomorrow that is wide open. Learn more at schwab.com/retirement. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And RDO, a digital music service allowing listeners to discover millions of songs and listen everywhere. RDIO.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
We'll be right back.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Maraca, Jesse Klein, and Alonzo Bowden. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill. I want to remind everybody about the big nationwide cinema event we're doing May 2nd, Wait Wait Live, in a theater near you. Tickets and more information is on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, though, it's time for the Wait Wait Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on air. Hi, you're on Wait Wait Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Johnny Blue.
Hey, Johnny Blue, how are you?
I'm good, Peter, how are you?
I'm fine. Johnny Blue, is that your name?
That's my real name, yes.
What do you do, Johnny Blue?
I'm a singer-songwriter.
You are?
Yeah.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Toronto in Canada.
You don't sound Canadian.
Oh, no, this is the way they sound.
Oh.
Yeah.
So where are you from, Johnny?
Originally, I'm from near Glasgow in Scotland.
Oh, I see. So you came to Toronto to be a singer-songwriter?
Well, I was a singer-songwriter when I was 10 years old. Then I left Scotland at 11 because I graduated university and came to Toronto.
I understand. Well, you're a smart guy. Well, Johnny, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Johnny's topic?
Give me the El Remoto.
No matter what country you live in, you love TV. This week, our panelists are going to tell you about three shows from around the world, perhaps even as popular as some of our big hits. Guess the real foreign show, and you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home voicemail. Ready to go?
Oh, yeah, great.
All right, first let's hear from Jesse Klein.
Luxembourg is one of the richest countries in the world, boasting the highest GDP per capita on the planet and a reputation as a tax shelter for wealthy foreigners. However, the newest hit show on Luxembourgian television represents a bit of a backlash to the flashy quality of life enjoyed by its citizens. The premise of Extreme Makeunder, Home Edition, is simple. A team of interior designers helps an incredibly rich, overprivileged family turn their fabulous mansion into a less offensive temple of human greed. The premiere episode featured the Chesshoffers, husband and wife stockbrokers who own a $30 million 20-room home. Over the course of the show, a team of contractors turned their indoor ski lift into a simple game room and gave the couple a framed photo of each other in place of their 20-foot porcelain statue of Angelina Jolie. Their solid gold escalators were replaced with stairs, and their personal IMAX theater was replaced with a television. As one enthusiastic viewer put it, I love this show because these people are the worst.
Extreme Makeunder Home Edition, making mansions more modest in Luxembourg. Your next story of TV around the world comes from Alonzo Bowden.
Those Yanks think they know everything, but reverse roads on them and they're like fish flopping out of water. On Britain's Sky TV's new hit show, The Other Side, Americans are picked up on camera at Heathrow rental car counters and watched as they drive on British roads. Some episodes follow unsuspecting Yanks as they plunge into the maze of London. Others use dashboard cameras to watch the Americans' faces as they drive 80 miles an hour on the, quote, wrong side of a superhighway. A popular drinking game is taking a swig every time you yell other side at the TV as Yanks drive down the right side of a left-hand road. The network censors stay pretty busy bleeping out words the Americans use to curse God, Queen, and country as they spend hour after hour driving the wrong way in a circle trying to escape the traffic circles. Another Yank made the mistake of asking a Scot for directions. Even native Englishmen don't understand it when they talk.
The Wrong Side is a reality show of Americans driving to drive in England. And your last story of the vast international wasteland comes from Morocco.
We'll be sawing. We'll be splitting, the hostess purred. We'll be stacking and we'll be burning. Thus begins Norway's recent blockbuster TV broadcast, National Firewood Night. 12 hours of Norwegians sawing, splitting, stacking, and burning firewood. But wait, it's even more exciting than it sounds. The first 4 hours is action-packed with Norwegians and parkas chopping wood. Then for 8 suspenseful hours, the camera stays on a close-up of the wood burning in the fireplace. For 8 hours. Quote, "I couldn't go to bed because I was so excited," one viewer wrote after the premiere. "When will they add new logs?" A full fifth of Norway's population tuned into the premiere. Of course, it wouldn't be a hit without some controversy. Quote, 50% complained that the bark was facing up, and the rest complained that the bark was facing down, said Lars Midding, the author whose bestseller on chopping, drying, and stacking wood was the basis of the TV show. One thing that really divides Norway is bark.
All right. Before we ask you to choose, there was a little dig at Scotsman in Alonzo's story. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I have a hard time understanding those guys myself.
I understand. Well, let's review your choices. From Alonzo, in fact, you had the story of a show about Britons watching Americans trying to drive on their roads. From Jesse Klein, it was a TV show from Luxembourg called Extreme Makeunder Home Edition, where people, I guess, undecorated over-the-top houses. And for Mo, a Norwegian TV show, a hit show, all about firewood, including 8 hours of just watching it burn. Which of these is the real international TV hit?
I'd love it if it was the driving one, because I think that's a real surefire hit.
Yeah.
But it's the Norwegian story, I'm sure.
You know that it's the Norwegian firewood
story? I'm pretty sure, yeah.
All right, well, that's your choice. We actually spoke to someone who helped create that real show.
I live in the inner parts of the country, and it's in my blood to stack with the bark down. That is a big discussion here in Norway.
That was the man himself, Lars Metting, whose book Solid Wood, all about chopping, drying, and stacking wood, was the basis for the hit Norwegian TV show National Firewood Night. Congratulations, Johnny. You got it right. Well done. You earned a point for Mo for being truthful for once. And you've won our prize. Carol Castle recorded the greeting on your home answering machine. Johnny, thank you so much for playing with us today. And now the game where great men answer some pretty okay questions. If the sport of baseball could talk, it would sound like John Miller. He's a Hall of Fame broadcaster who did the play-by-play on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball for 20 years and was and still is the voice of the San Francisco Giants. John Miller, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well,
So, John, you've been calling baseball games for a while, right?
My first year doing Major League Baseball was 1974, which is, you know, more than 20 years ago.
A little bit more, yeah. And how did you learn to do it? Because I know it's a lot harder than it might seem.
I really always wanted to do it because I was a big baseball fan, but not a great baseball player. So I bought a tabletop baseball game called Strat-O-Matic.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to while away the hours all summer long growing up near San Francisco, rolling these dice and playing these games and broadcasting the games. And not just broadcasting the games, but I would do the crowd noise. I would be the public address announcer, the ballpark organist. I'd be the whole show.
Oh, my God.
So. Did you also have an imaginary girlfriend?
Oh, it was odd if you walked in on me. I always felt bad for my kid brother who he'd come home with one of his friends and walk into the room, and there'd be his big brother, you know, going, "There's a base hit to left field." Right fielder, Hilda. Roger Maris, yes. Number 9. This was how I spent my youth. And the great thing is, I still do the same thing. I just don't have to do the crowd noise.
I appreciate that. Well, when you were doing that, did you do the occasional sort of heckling of the players that the mics in the crowd would have? I love that when that happens, when you hear people screaming at the players and it gets picked up in the broadcast. Did you do that too?
Actually, when I was first starting out as a major league broadcaster in 1974, I did the Oakland A's games, and it was an incredible lucky break for me. But the A's were the best team in baseball, but nobody went to see them. The paid attendance that year, after they'd won two straight World Series and were in the process of winning a third in a row, the attendance was 840,000. And we used to have people shout at us while we were broadcasting from down in the stands, said, "Keep it quiet up there, will you, for God's sake?
Trying to watch a game." Your most famous, at least, you'll probably go down in history for, among other things, you're in the Hall of Fame, that helps, but for your call of Barry Bonds' record-breaking home run.
I don't know if I'm famous or infamous for that, but I've been fortunate to do a lot of World Series and historic events. I broadcast the night that Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record, which...
Oh, yeah, you were, of course, the Orioles announcer.
And I remember the David Letterman show asked me to come on before the game that night because they were taping that night's show and tell us what you're going to say when he breaks the record. And I said, "Okay, Dave. And now the game begins. The Orioles take the field, and there goes Cal Ripken out to shortstop. He's there now, and that's the record." Because that was, you didn't have to hit a home run or get a base hit or do it. All he had to do was show up, and he had the record.
We heard that in addition to your skills as a baseball announcer, that you're known for your impressions. Is that true?
Everybody does an impression of somebody, and for me it was certain baseball broadcasters who were very distinctive, or even public address announcers, and probably my all-time favorite, and he's passed away now, so there goes my act.
Yeah.
But when you would go to Yankee Stadium,
oh, sure,
it not only was the great historic ballpark where the Babe and Lou Gehrig played, and Mantle and Maris and all those great players in championships, but then the public address announcer would welcome you to the ballpark, and you really knew you were someplace special. Bob Shepard was
his
name.
Yes, of course.
And he'd come on, and he'd say, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Yankee Stadium, for today's game between..." And the only thing was is that Bob spoke so slowly, elegantly, but slowly, that when he'd give the starting lineups before the game, it would be the fifth inning before he...
Now, one of the things about calling a baseball game, you have to make it interesting even when nothing is happening, which happens a lot in a baseball game. So we wanted to test you. Do you think you could do a play-by-play on me, say, making a ham sandwich? If you could narrate that.
Now, at the deli section in the supermarket that he frequents, there are maybe 12 different qualities of ham, and that alone can be a very daunting sort of a project, and I know that he gave it a lot of thought ahead of time, so he's got excellent ham. That's no problem. The question is, what kind of cheese to match it with? It'll be interesting to see what he's going to pull out next, because a lot of people, they just put that American cheese and bleh. But if I know him, no, this is going to be some beautiful French aged cheese. Oh, there it is!
John, we are delighted to talk to you, but we've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
You're going to eat that?
Science writer Mary Roach, having covered sex and death already, has a new book out called Gulp, Adventures in the Alimentary Canal. It's coming soon. We're going to ask you three questions based on her remarkable book, and if you get two right, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Bill, who is John Miller playing for?
Elliot Liebson of St. Louis, Missouri.
Here, John, is your first question. For centuries, scientists have been trying to figure out how to get nutrition out of things that are, well, not food. So in the 19th century, you could try a nutritional supplement made from what? A, Peruvian seabird guano, B, tiny pebbles, or C, ground up scrap iron?
This is a real question?
It's a real question based on an actual fact.
All right, well, I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with Peruvian seabird guano. You're right. That's what they did. Back in the 19th century, there was this theory that certain animals did not digest their food completely, so you could get some use out of it after they were done with it, as it were. This turned out not to be true. Next question. Rabbis spend a lot of time deciding what's kosher and what is not. They recently decided that what is kosher? A, bacon. B, Zima clear malt. Or C, human hair.
These questions are just so obvious, you know.
Yes.
All right, well, I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, Zima clear malt, the now discontinued horror beverage. No, I'm afraid it was actually C, human hair. And you may ask, who eats human hair? And the answer is you do, because food processors extract a particular kind of protein from human hair that is then used in food processing.
Wow.
So isn't that amazing?
I'm amazed.
All right, now this is exciting, John. This is an exciting game, as you might say. In fact, I wish you were announcing this game, because it's tense, because you've got one for two with one to go. If you get this last question, you will win it all. Until they reach a certain age, it turns out, kids will pretty much eat anything. It turns out that cultural food preferences are not innate. They're learned. So one study found that 55% of kids under 29 months happily ate which of these disgusting choices? A, a coil of peanut butter scented with Limburger cheese and presented as dog do. B, a piping hot bowl of something they called Quaker's goat meal. Or C, a McRib sandwich.
Okay, I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B? Quaker's goat meal?
Yeah.
What would Quaker's goat meal be?
I don't know. If I was 2 years old, I'd eat it.
All right, your choice then is a piping hot bowl of something they call Quaker's goat meal. It was A. It was the coil of peanut butter. And the whole point was that you could give a little kid something called dog do, and he'd go, okay. But they don't learn to be disgusted by it until later.
All right. I should have had that one. I don't know what I was thinking.
I don't know. Bill, how did John do in our quiz?
He did, well, he didn't do very well. but John, you know, all these tidbits are going to come in handy during the seventh inning for you.
Yes. I actually wanted to see if you could do something. Your team has just lost. You have just lost. So if you were announcing this game that you just played and you knew that the John Miller fans at home, of whom there are many, were sad that the John Miller team did not come out with a win, what would you say?
I'd have to go with the Harry Carey idea in that scenario.
Yeah?
Oh, what was he thinking of? I can't believe it. $10 million a year and he only gets one ride. Holy cow.
John Miller is the play-by-play announcer for the San Francisco Giants. John Miller, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What a pleasure to talk to you. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local contractors, dentists, electricians, and mechanics to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Maraca, Jesse Klein, and Alonzo Bowden. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill.
In just a minute, Bill says words that rhyme with each other in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Jesse, one of the advantages of owning a hybrid car is that you save money, of course, by using less gas. One problem, though, according to legislators in Virginia, at least, is what?
One problem with hybrid cars?
Yes, that they've worked to correct.
That they're too expensive.
Well, it's sort of a glass half full, glass half empty, or gas tank half full, gas tank half empty problem for the...
The gas tank sometimes is half empty. Peter, I don't know the answer.
They're not always full.
Does anybody else know the answer?
I'm twisting in the wind here.
It doesn't require a lot of money to fill the gas tank, so they're taxes.
Exactly right.
Right.
The problem with hybrid cars is they don't buy enough gas.
Right.
Oh.
So the owners don't pay enough gas taxes.
Oh, wait, so I got that point.
You did.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry. Sometimes I get lost.
All right. Being green, fine. If you want to go that way, do that. But it doesn't mean you can shirk your duty to pay taxes on stuff you don't need to buy anymore. In an interview with CBS, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell said, quote, "We have to be practical. If everybody had a hybrid car, there would be no gas tax revenue," unquote. In fact, many on the Virginia Senate Finance Committee thought the measure should be expanded to include fines on people who don't own cars. Because what kind of lame gas tax dodge is that?
So do you get a tax break if you power your hybrid with coal or just burn wood like in the gas tank?
Yeah, that would be good, I guess, as long as you pollute and pay gases. Now, the idea is that because of this, they have imposed a $100 hybrid fee on every hybrid car. You have to pay $100 to the state because to make up for the gas taxes.
To punish people for saving.
To punish people, yeah.
Energy. Yeah.
It's only fair to go after hybrid owners and get that extra money because not only are they saving money on gas, they're also saving money on dates that they never have to go on.
Are hybrids unsexy?
Well...
Yes.
What do you? All right, Alonzo's a car guy.
Well, all right, you're taking
yes.
a stand.
Women who are real into the green thing, like real greenies, would go for you in a Prius, but that you don't want that. You don't want that.
Is that because they'll eat a lot of roughage? And what is it that they're doing that's not...
No, they go for the whole thing. You get the whole package with that. You get fleece and funny shoes.
Right. Quinoa?
Yeah, it's not good.
So you wouldn't...
You can't be a badass in a hybrid. It's impossible.
You could put like fuzzy dice in your hybrid, and that would be cool.
I love Mo. That's your idea of what ladies love. Some fuzzy dice in that car.
And mutt flaps with like the silhouette of sexy ladies.
We love that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, NPR was going to do away with car talk, but now that we got Mo rocking.
Exactly.
I think Mo's ready to take over.
Mo, gender-specific product branding is nothing new, but a company in Florida has finally released the first what made exclusively for men.
Is celery for men.
It is a food.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. It's part of male culture, if you get my meaning.
Oh, fig leaves? No, but that's always for men. Food that's associated with guys.
Well, not usually, but now they're going to try to make it associated.
So it's like a lady kind of fruit that's now like being made for men.
A lady fruit.
I'm ready to jump in and steal Mo's points
no,
at any
cannot.
Time. And
no,
I want to steal my point back.
It's unfair because you know more about lady fruits. No, so a fruit that you wouldn't associate. Well, I think that like...
I never said it was a fruit.
Okay, all right. Okay, sorry that I was revealing too much. Okay, now, so the... is it a food?
Yeah, it's a food.
Okay.
It has to do with culture.
Food that has to do with culture. That sounds odd.
Jesse!
Yogurt.
Thank you!
Oh.
You know what it is? You and the guys are having a beer after work when all of a sudden it hits that yogurt craving. But one quick look at the supermarket confirms that we're living in an oppressive yogurt matriarchy. Pink packaging, fruit flavors.
So is it now Mactivia? Mactivia!
No, we've got good news then. It's, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce the new product, Brogurt.
Is that Brogurt true? Is that what it's been called?
I hope so. The company Powerful Yogurt says their Brogurt is made for the modern man's active lifestyle, which we assume means the container is funnel-shaped so you can squeeze it directly into your mouth. And we can't wait for manly yogurt flavors like truck. And the kind you have to stir up, like it says leather on the bottom.
I'm just thinking of hanging out with the boys, piling into a hybrid and going out looking for a yogurt.
Yeah.
You know something? Bring on the sequester. We're done. Yeah.
If male yogurt marketing is anywhere near as annoying as female yogurt marketing, you are in for a treat. You know, every female yogurt commercial is basically like women in a wedding dress just petting a kitten and eating yogurt.
But the equivalent of the male would be like some guy eating the yogurt over a sink while reading Maxim. You know, that's like...
Eating a new yogurt and peeing into his old yogurt at the same time.
Oh, that's what the culture was about.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
20 minutes later. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call to leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our upcoming show up the road in Rockford, Illinois, at the Coronado Theater on April 4th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
This is Michelle Miles in Butte, Montana.
Butte, Montana.
Do these jeans make my butte look big?
Well, welcome to the show, Michelle.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle, is going to read you, perform for you, I would say, three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, and you will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
We Brazilians find manscaping scary. Of razor blades, we are quite wary. And please keep your wax off our chests and our backs. Don't pick at us, because we are...
Hairy.
Hairy, yes!
Hairy, it is.
Hairy Brazilians say Gillette's new ad with beautiful women encouraging men to shave their chests is insensitive and prejudiced against the hairy. It's true, you never stop to think how those razor ads feel to the follicularly endowed. Is smooth really better than bushy? Don't you need something to catch the soup that falls out of your mouth?
Do they really think that a woman who's had a Brazilian wax is going to feel sorry for them on the chest hair issue?
That's probably true. All right, here is your next limerick.
It's not just the endless loud noise and the bruises from stepping on toys. Kids sap all her forces and use her resources. Mom's life is cut short by her...
boys.
Right, yes. Very good.
Michelle, yes. Great.
According to a recent study published in the journal Biology Letters, having sons can shorten a mother's life. This is because in infancy, sons are bigger and heavier than daughters, therefore draining a mother's resources. So if you want to live a long and stress-free life, try having a daughter and then have that daughter skip ages 12 to 19. Here's your last limerick.
Spend all day in a hut on ice, moping. For those endless hours, some need help coping. So, it might be best to enforce routine tests. Let's make sure our ice fishers aren't...
doping.
Yes, doping. Very good. As soon as the World Ice Fishing Championship wrapped up in Wisconsin, the winners were confronted by a U.S. anti-doping agency official who ordered them to submit to urine samples. Fortunately, it wasn't difficult. They're Irish fishermen. They drink beer all day. They were testing for human growth hormones and steroids, both of which promote muscle growth in athletes. In addition to the urine sample, the USADA official was able to clear the competitors by doing a newer test called just looking at them. Bill, how did Michelle do in our quiz?
She swept it. 3-0. Everyone
well,
right.
Very well done, Michelle. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Mo and Alonzo each have 3, and Jesse has 2.
Well, Jesse, you are in third place. That means that you go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Please fill in the blank.
Okay.
After a contentious confirmation battle on Wednesday, Blank was sworn in as the new defense secretary.
Hagel.
Yes, Chuck Hagel. On Thursday, the U.S. announced that it would provide an additional $60 million to rebel forces fighting in blank.
Syria.
Right. On Thursday, the House voted to pass the reauthorization of the Blank Against Blank Act.
Violence against women.
Right. A nonprofit foundation announced this week it's looking for a married couple to send on a mission to blank.
Mars.
Right. The Denver Airport Authority is working on ways to protect cars parked in airport lots from being blanked.
Stolen?
No, eaten by rabbits. Raul Castro said last Sunday that in 5 years he will step down from his position as president of blank.
Cuba.
Cuba. Sorry. After repeatedly requesting a witness statement from a police dog, a British prosecutor got back an official document with the words blank.
Woof?
No. The statement said, I chase him. I bite him. Bad man. He tasty.
Well, obviously.
So, prosecutors in Britain were repeatedly asking for a witness statement from Officer P.D. Peach of the Metropolitan Police, even after officers wrote in to explain that P.D. Peach was a police dog. So, getting tired of the harassment, they submitted this statement signed with a paw print, I chase him, I bite him, bad man, he tasty, good boy, Peach. Bill, how did Jesse do in our quiz?
She got 5 right. That gives her 10 more points, so she's in the lead with 12.
All right. Very well done. We have flipped a coin, and Alonzo has elected to go second. So, fill in the blank, Alonzo. This week, the Supreme Court heard arguments challenging a key provision of the Blank Act.
Voting rights.
Yes. After his performance came under criticism this week, Oscar host Blank said he would not host the show again.
Seth MacFarlane.
Right. On Monday, the former Surgeon General Blank died in New Hampshire at age 96.
Coop.
Yes, C. Everett Coop. A man named Amos Schuckman's obituary in the New York Times mentioned he, quote, loved everything about New York except Blank.
New Yorkers.
No, except the New York Times. DC Comics announced this week that it plans to kill off sidekick Blank in the number 8 issue of the Batman Incorporated series.
Robin?
Yes, Robin the Boy Wonder. Two thieves in San Diego who broke into a Hooters to steal their ATM were foiled when they blanked.
Were distracted.
No, when they... Whoa, look at that! When they stole the jukebox instead. It was dark in the restaurant, to be fair. Maybe there were some ATMs out there that have multicolored lights and play Johnny Cash. The suspects were caught on security cameras as they smashed the glass door with their truck, hefted the jukebox into the truck, and then stopped to marvel at the enormous coins that the ATM seemed to display. They're so big and shiny. Bill, how did Alonzo do in our quiz?
He did well. He got 4 right, 8 more points. You have 11, but Jesse is still in the lead.
All right. So how many, then, does Mo need to win?
5 to win for the Mo.
The Mo.
Oh. He's got that. Mo, I feel it.
The Mo has the big Mo.
Great, okay.
Here we go, Mo. This is for the game. Mm. Fill in the blank. The Senate Judiciary Committee heard emotional testimony this week regarding a proposed ban on blank.
Assault weapons.
Yes, Yahoo CEO Marissa Meyer caused controversy this week by announcing that Yahoo employees could no longer blank.
Telecommute.
Yes, work from home. On Thursday, President Obama urged the Supreme Court to overturn Proposition 8, which bans blank in California.
Same-sex marriage.
Right. On the third day of his visit, Dennis Rodman told the leader of blank that he had a friend for life.
The third day of his visit, Dennis Rodman told a foreign leader.
Yes, which foreign leader? The foreign leader of what country?
It's a foreign leader of a country that would make us go, my God, how scandalous.
Yes.
Hugo Chavez.
No, it was North Korea.
Oh, wow, that's bad.
I know. A A warehouse worker in England who punched his boss was apparently overstressed from his job blanking.
At the warehouse, his warehouse. He punched his boss because he was stressed about his job punching things.
He was stressed from his job packing stress balls into boxes. In an interview with Wolf Blitzer on Wednesday, Bob Woodward said that the blank had threatened him over his reporting on the sequester.
The Obama administration.
Yeah, the White House. This week, Boeing apologized to Japan's leading airlines for the grounding of the blank.
The 7-7.
How about its nickname? What's it called?
The Superfly Jet.
The Dreamliner. A Florida woman is doing just fine after being shocked this week by her friend's blank.
By her friends, God, it's Florida, so it has to be a toucan.
No. It was her friend's oven.
Damn.
The woman's friend was storing his bullets in the oven, something he forgot to mention when the subject of waffles came up, and when the oven heated up, it opened fire. But I want you to remember, people, before you jump to conclusions and start passing laws, the only thing that can stop a bad oven with a gun is a good oven with a gun. Bill, did Mo do well enough to win?
No.
Oh.
What you're supposed to say to build the suspense is he needed 5 correct answers, but he only had 4, so the winner this week is Jesse Klein.
That's right! Jesse!
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists the next surprising place we will find horses. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. RDO, a digital music service allowing listeners to discover millions of songs and listen everywhere. RDIO.com. Charles Schwab, providing retirement options for tomorrow that is wide open. Learn more at schwab.com/retirement. And Esurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim, online or via mobile at esurance.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Hammock Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer coordinator is Ray Teresi. Our intern is Miles Davis, kind of Blue Dernboss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Showbiz Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillock. And then the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Mike Hackamop Danforth. Now, panel, where will horses turn up next? Alonzo Bowden.
We're going to be shocked when we see horses running the Indy 500 to save on fuel.
Jesse Klein.
I think we will see a horse on the roof of Mitt Romney's car.
An oldie,
so
but a goodie.
Stupid, it's so old.
And Mo Rocca.
Well, I'd like to see horses show up in shampoo commercials.
And if that happens, Mo, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. What a pleasure. To be next to your Golden Throat, we're talking to Alonzo Bowden, Jesse Klein, Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we'll still be next week when we see you again. This is NPR.
Listener support makes our service possible. Make a contribution to National Public Radio today, and you'll have a chance to win an 8-day trip for two to Ireland during our Spring E-Pledge. Pledge now at WPLN.org.
This is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.